So I'm Bu Yun. I'm a postdoc in Dr. James Tanaka's lab from University of Victoria, British Columbia. And I'm going to talk about steady-state visual evoked potential. So I'll refer that to SSVEP because it's much shorter. So SSVEP and face recognition. So we've been looking for a connection between the neural responses and our behavior in recognizing faces. So recently, the method of steady state visual evoked potential has been used in study high level visual processing, which in the past has been used to study low level visual processing and also auditory processing. But it's only until recently this method has been used to study face processing. So we're trying to use this method and see if the measurements we get from this method correlates with the behavioral performance of facial recognition. So just what is the SSVEP? I think it's a straightforward way to describe it is, let's say if you present something on a screen at a periodic frequency, let's say 6 hertz, so you see six, let's say, face pictures per second presented on the screen, and your brainwave will be gradually entrained into this frequency. So if you look at your brainwave, you'll find a predominant component of 6 hertz and all the harmonics, which are 12, 18, 24, etc. So this is the steady state visual evoked potential. And so we're using this kind of a presentation, way of presentation to study faces. So we will show participants a 1 minute of these kind of presentations. So if we have 6 faces per second, and for 60 seconds, and we'll see 360 faces within a minute. So let's imagine those are faces, okay? So every letter represents one face identity. So face A is face A, and B, C, D, E, F, G, they're different faces. So if we have, every second we have 6 faces, and because we are interested in face recognition, so facial identity processing is kind of the main manipulation we need to have here. So we manipulate the identity of the face. So we show 4 faces, and each fifth face is a different face. Then go back to the face A, then you see face C, then go back to face A, then face D, etc. So you see 6 faces every second, but 4 same faces and 1 different face, that's kind of the chunking you can have. So it's interesting here because now we have 2 frequencies, right? So we call the first frequency, or kind of give it name as a general frequency. So that actually measures how often do you see a face. So this is 6 hertz here. So you see 6 faces every second. And there's another frequency, which is to us, it's more interesting because we call that a specific component, because this component we think it tags into the processing of face identity. So this is how often do you see a different face? So we have another frequency. So anyone know what the frequency is? Yes.
1 hertz.
15 hertz.
Yeah, so within 5 seconds, you see 6 different faces, and it goes back to the kind of a circle. So it's actually 1.2 hertz. Yeah, so we have these 2 frequencies, and so if we, and both of these 2 components, they are actually, they're both periodic. So we have these 2 components kind of interlaced with each other. So we expect to see 2 different frequency component in our brainwave. So, and when we talk about the presentation, a periodic presentation, it's not just on and off, on and off. Actually, we use a sinusoidal manipulation of the contrast, which gives you a smoother feeling of the onset and offset of a face. So if at the beginning, it's totally blended into the background, which is gray, and it gradually, the contrast gradually increases. And at the top of the circle, we have a full contrast of faces, and it goes back. And then a second circle, the second cycle starts. And so this is a sinusoidal manipulation of the contrast. And as you notice, for each face, even if there's they are the same face, we try to manipulate the size of the picture, face picture. This is because we don't want you to process the picture, and we want you to process the identity. So even if they're different pictures, right, because they have different size, and because we have this pretty good size variation on face processing, then we think if you're processing the same identity, then this won't matter. You'll think they're the same face, even if they're the different picture. So every fourth same face and the fifth face is different. And so this is a different way of, you know, chunking the stimulus. And this is not one second, but it is actually five stimulus. So we have two frequencies, 6 hertz, which is the general processing. And we think it should not correlate with facial face recognition because it doesn't actually tag in the face identity. But for this component, the 1.2 hertz component, we think it should somehow correlate with the identity processing, because every time you see a different face, you process the identity. So in summary, we have two, we expect to see two kind of independent components. One is that 6 hertz and the harmonics. And we think the scalp distribution of this component should be more at the occipital locations, because it's a little bit lower level than processing the facial identity. And for this component, the specific component, we're expecting to see peaks at 1.2 hertz and harmonics. And the scalp distribution should be at the more kind of a classic face regions at the occipital temporal scalp locations. So these are the hypotheses. And well, you can take a look at the example of the simulation. And you actually have a task to detect the color change of the cross. So did anyone see the change? Well, because the refresh rate of the projector is pretty bad, so I kind of know, prepared. So we have a slow motion here. Yeah, I think it's much clearer here. And you can actually see, you know, every fifth phase is different, and the first four phases are the same. And it's interesting because I actually ask our participant, do you find different faces? Even if it's flickering at 6 hertz, it's really fast. I say, yeah, I can see some of the faces different, but none of them actually know it's actually, you know, every fourth phase and the fifth phase, so they don't know that 1.2 hertz thing. Okay, so this is the way of presentation, and this will go on, actually the fast version will go on for a minute, and we only test four trials, which is already too much, I think, because this method actually has pretty good reliability. So it's a very fast kind of a method to get your responses. So after we collect the brain wave responses, you get these complex waves, and we put these waves into a Fourier transformation. So to me, I don't have a background of engineering, but I think a good way to explain Fourier transformation is to put something into a prism, and you have, you know, the output is different independent components, and each component had its own power. So after the Fourier transformation, we'll have a frequency by amplitude graph, something like this. So the x-axis is frequency, and the y-axis is amplitude. And because we're using steady state, so we expect to see like large peaks at the frequency of the presentation and also the harmonics. So let's pretend this is 6 hertz here. And so when we get this, and you probably find the baseline isn't flat because we have alpha range and slow waves, there are more noises. So we compute a signal-to-noise ratio. So we pick a certain point and treat it as a signal, and we divide it by the averaged amplitude of its neighbors, and we define that as noise, so we have a signal-to-noise ratio. And we do that to every point here. And after this, we'll have a much flatter baseline. And you can still see the peaks, and the baseline is much flatter. So every graph you see in this presentation will be a signal-to-noise ratio and frequency chart. Okay, so let's look at the general component first. So we expect to see that at the occipital, to have an occipital scalp distribution, and the peaks will be at 6 hertz and the harmonics. So we first look at the scalp distribution. It's pretty robustly, pretty obviously, it's predominantly at the occipital scalp distribution. And if we extract data from this channel, and because we're only testing from 32 channels, so we kind of have that OZ channel at the back of the head that we're looking at. We extract the data from this channel and do all the Fourier transformation and signal to noise ratio. And it's obvious we can see the big peaks at all the 6 hertz and all the harmonics, but not at the 7th harmonics. And you actually probably notice these little guys here, right? So these are the specific component. But this is not the right place to look at these components. And I'll talk about it later when we look at the right location. But let's focus on the general component. So this is the scalp distribution map for each component. And you can see there, the majority of them have a very clear distribution of the occipital, except for the first one. There's a little bit on the right occipital location, and I'll explain. I have some assumption why that might be the case, and I can I will tell you later. Yeah. So as you can see, it's a pretty nice distribution and it's pretty robust. So this is a general component, and we look at the specific component. So we expect to see that at the occipital temporal locations, and the peaks will be at 1.2 and harmonics. So the scalp map says so, like it's kind of bilateral occipital temporal location, which is a little bit different than previous research done by Bruno Rachel. And they found it's pretty right hemisphere dominant, but we find it's kind of bilateral here. And so because it's bilateral, so we average the data from both the left and right occipital temporal sites, and we find we get a graph like this. And the first thing I notice is it's these big peaks, right? So these are the kind of the signal spreaded from the occipital location for the general component. And this is not the focus here. Now we're focusing at those little peaks here. So yeah, so it's reliable until this is the 8th harmonic, but it's getting less signals here. It's kind of like other stuff started to participate here. And they both have a pretty nice occipital temporal distribution. And one thing that's kind of inevitable using this method is the 5th harmonic is overlapped with the general component. And maybe so let's like hypothetically saying like it's the amplitude is like this big. So maybe this is why we find at the also the location this at the first harmonic you see something at the right hemisphere. But this is just an assumption. There's I don't know a good way to kind of separate these two components, which might not be possible. And we're interested in individual differences. So these are the scalp map of the specific component across all the participants. So the first impression I have when I look at these, most of them have a pretty nice kind of a distribution. It's pretty consistent, but we do find some of them are bilateral and others are more right hemisphere dominant and some of them are left hemisphere dominant. At first, I think it might have something to do with gender because there are literature showing in ERP or fMRI showing like females are more left lateralized or even bilateralized in processing phases where males are more right hemisphere dominant. And it doesn't seem to be the case because, well, at first, I didn't have these, right? So we have a pretty, more females to test and see if that might be the case. Then I test more and balance the gender ratio of the sample. And it doesn't seem to be the case. And if we look at them separately, it's pretty much the same. And there's no reliable difference between the two gender here. So I think, okay, the gender is not why we see this bilateral distribution. So now we have the two components of from the steady state, and we kind of tested our hypothesis, and they're both so the general component is at have this scalp distribution, and the specific has the occipital temporal location. And then once we have this, we're tapping into the next question. So how to correlate that with the behavioral performance? And we're using Cambridge Fish Memory Test. I don't think I need to introduce this since Isabel has done it. Thanks. So okay, so just jump into that. So the y-axis here now is the performance of a Cambridge Fish Memory Test, and the x-axis is the signal-to-noise ratio, and we're looking at the sixers or the general components, which we think should not correlate with the Cambridge Fish Memory Test, and it doesn't seem like it's correlated. And actually, there's a little trend showing it's a little bit negative correlation, which is a little bit weird, but in general, it's not. So this is the component of interest, the specific component, and so we can see a little. It's a strong trend, I should say, although it's not reliable. Yeah, maybe it's because of this outlier, but. Yeah. So we see a little bit stronger trend of a positive correlation. But then I think since we're studying individual differences, and there are individual differences that not just, you know, for face recognition, you can, and since this is a testing of EEG, some people might have a strong signal to noise ratio, a strong response overall. Some of us might have a weaker brain responses. So since we have two component here, I think this, the general components, should be a very good candidate for controlling these kind of general responsiveness individual differences. And if we use this to add a control, and then we can, so except for this, we do a proportion. So it's the specific processing SNR divided by the general processing SNR, and then the correlation improved. Some of you might notice like there are some outliers here. So if I remove those three guys, it dropped to a 0.38. So it's not a huge drop. And I think it's kind of nice to have, especially those two kind of a lower performance, because I think I was actually looking at Isabel's result. I think the average score of the Cambridge Fish Memory Test is about 70 in your study, but here it's, actually, I think it's higher. The average, the mean score is higher, and this is the average across the noise and non-noise version. And we have an interesting finding that actually the correlation is stronger with the noise version of the Cambridge Fish Memory Test. So we might have some ceiling effect here, I think.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why that's the case, because these are all Canadian students. Maybe Canadians more. You're welcome. So I think we find the correlation between the neural responses and the behavior of performance of facial recognition. Of course, we have a lot more to do, because I think there's I see individual differences in those scalp maps, and maybe I should just for whoever is right hemisphere dominated, I should just use a score of the data from the right hemisphere sides. Maybe there's something else we can do to analyze the data. And yeah, we have a few next steps. So we're interested in perceptual expertise, and our lab is also testing bird experts. So we're using the same technique to test bird experts. And I think when we're testing bird experts, we give them a bird task and also the Cambridge Fish Memory Test. Then we can do the, kind of a control for general like visual ability, as Isabel mentioned. And we're interested in people with autism. And it's actually very interesting here, because as you remember, the fixation cross task you have to do is, the fixation cross is actually between the eyes. And people with autism, they have this tendency to avoid processing the eyes. And I did one pilot of a kid on the spectrum, and he couldn't even finish the task. He said, "Oh, it's so irritating to just looking at the cross. He has to look at the keyboard and just like use the peripheral vision to." So he couldn't even finish the task. But some other, we have another pilot actually much earlier, and he doesn't have a problem with this task. So there's a huge individual differences there. And also we're hoping to test the so-called other race effect. So if I show a Chinese face to Caucasian participants, are they processing that better than the Caucasian faces, or like we do the same thing in China to see the difference, if the difference is still there. Yeah. So I want to close this talk by showing something I think is pretty cool. So I attend the Summer Fellowship Institute last year, and Janet showed us how to make these recurring plot. And I think for steady state, it's actually a pretty good way to create something like this, because so this is the brain response in 1 second. So you have six like peaks, and this plot shows the cell similarity of the brainwave. It looks pretty cool, and that's all that matters. Okay, I want to thank TDLC Pan and Bruno Rochon, who's been pioneering this, and Bonnie is our lab manager, and all the lab the members in our lab, and Jim. Okay, thanks.